Floyd Shivambu has always been the strategist behind the slogans. Sharp, disciplined, but oftentimes restless. From the EFF's firebrand economics to MK's populist nationalism, and now the Afrika Mayibuye movement. His path tells a bigger story about South African politics. Ambition, reinvention, and dare we say, survival. On Level Up today, we're asking what drives Floyd Shivambu. Conviction or convenience? Floyd, thank you for coming and being with us. South Africans have seen you in many guises over the years. They've seen you grow and they've seen you evolve from the Youth League to the EFF, a little bit at MK, and now you're starting your own political, is it party yet or is it still a movement?
I'm not starting a political party and I'm not starting a political movement. I'm part of a mandate from the people of South Africa that were consulted about formation of a political movement. And I've been assigned to lead that process. So it's many of us who have been mandated by different constituencies, traditional leaders, religious leaders, workers' unions, and a variety of other constituencies that said that there seemed to be no proper representation of particularly the historically excluded people, that they remain on the margins of political and economic developments in South Africa. So that is where we are. So Afrika Mayibuye movement is a movement, and as part of that movement, there's a political party, there's a women organization, there's a youth organization, there's a workers' union called Mandashu, Workers' Union of South Africa, and different components as well. So we are in the process of founding a movement which is going to bring about the true freedom and emancipation in South Africa.
And for you, what is the golden thread that connects these different chapters and resonates with you?
Look, I think throughout my political life, I've been very consistent in terms of revolutionary politics as to what should happen to South Africa's economy. I've always advocated for a decisive redress of the imbalances of the past in terms of land ownership. I've always understood the generational struggles and battles that we're in as taking the baton from those that fought against colonial invasion and land dispossession in South Africa. Because since the arrival of white colonial settlers in the African continent, particularly here in South Africa, they took our land, they took our mineral resources, they took our dignity, they subjected us to super exploitation, to slavery. They treated us as subhumans. And all attempts to fight against that colonial conquest have not yet succeeded. So we are still a conquered people, all of us. So I then connect the struggles of what we're doing to the fight against colonial invasion. And that can only be
Can I ask for clarity?
Yes.
You've evolved and grown through different formations.
Yes.
Are you then saying that these other platforms were not adequate or were not addressing this particular view for yourself?
Yeah, so let's give a proper historicization that when was in the ANC and ANC Youth League, I was in the national leadership of the ANC Youth League for 5 years and sat in the Economic Transformation Committee and a lot of serious and very high-level decision-making platforms of the African National Congress, and got to objectively realize that the ANC is not committed to revolutionary change, just wants to manage the status quo and leave things as they are. And the observations and characterization of the ANC which I made when I left the ANC, when I resigned from the ANC, is what I wrote in the founding documents of the Economic Freedom Fighters. There's a chapter in the founding manifesto of the EFF, which focuses on the diagnosis of the African National Congress and South African society as to the politics. And some were even projections of what is going to be the path of the ANC in the 10 years from 2013. And everything else that we said there, it began to be a reality that the ANC is going to degenerate further, that a lot of people are going to drift away from it because it is not committed to revolutionary change. And that time, that was the basis of founding the Economic Freedom Fighters, because the collective observation that we had made at that particular point was that the ANC was just satisfied with political freedom without any economic power. Then we then came to say that let us have an organization that primarily will fight for economic freedom in our lifetime. And of course, we then got to found the EFF, and it went, reached 10 years, began to participate, and of course participated in 5 elections, both local and general elections, and then participated and began to participate in government in different municipalities after the 2021 local government elections. And what made me to drift away from the EFF was that the leadership of the EFF and majority of the people that got to be deployed in government, and mostly anchored by the leadership, were beginning to show very strong trends of what they were accused of, some of them when they were in the ANC, of trying to manipulate government tenders and wrongdoing. Then I realized that I don't want to be associated with such, because that has never been my politics. That is why even in the founding cardinal pillars and principles of the EFF was the principle of building state capacity with the aim of abolishing tenders. So once a larger component began to even train councillors on how to steal government money, I realized that I cannot associate with this. And then, of course, then I left, went to try to rescue the MK, which had multiple crises since its formation. Played my role in the MK, because when I arrived in MK, there was no proper organizational systems. There was no documents that was guiding anything. There were no meetings. There were no systems and all of those things. Then we got to professionalize the organization until a certain point, but got to realize intimately as well that it's not really an organization. It's a family project. So the President Zuma has got no problem over the family dinner table to discuss and take decisions about Mkhonto Wesizwe, like final decisions. And that is not how organizations are run. So my politics is that I've always believed that we could contribute to different organizational platforms to pursue an agenda. And if I believe that majority of the people in that organization are against the agenda that I strongly believe in, I disassociate from that. I do not impose myself to say that, no, let me just maybe tag along. I don't take along to rubbish. I don't take along to nonsense in terms of the politics. When I realize that this is not towards the direction that I believe in, I disassociate and do so decisively. So that has been my politics. And I'm glad that now we're in a space where we can much more decisively shape the direction and content and form of a revolutionary movement. So that is basically, you know, what I'm busy with here now.
Yeah, just listening to you, I hear a man that can easily move between spaces.
No.
And what I... Well, look, just listening to what you're saying, I am hearing a man who is easily able to walk away from a particular thing and re-emerge in a different space and try and fit in.
So I'm not done. Okay.
And try and fit in. And if you feel that you're trying to fit in is not working, easily move to the next thing. So there are people who may see this as a chameleon, as a person who is politically very ambitious and can only operate in a space that benefits only their view. How would you respond to that?
No, look, so I'll give you a clearer context, like not a theoretical or hypothetical. What you're giving is a hypothesis. The reality is that when we were leading in the ANC clique, the views that I held personally were able to argue those first in the structures of the ANC clique on economic freedom in our lifetime, on the perspective on nationalization of mines. And then we got to persuade the ANC to adopt those resolutions. Like if you check the 2010 National General Council of the ANC, adopted the clarion call on economic freedom in our lifetime, agreed on nationalization of mines and expropriation of land without compensation on a far much more faster pace in terms of economic transformation. So in terms of ideas, we were aligned. What I disassociated with were the subjective practices and mannerisms of the people that got to work with to realize that collectively, whilst we have agreed ideologically and politically that this is the direction that we must take, but in practice it was something else, and then believe that perhaps it's the nature of an organization which has moved very slowly in terms of transforming South African society, but also the DNA of the African National Congress is not revolutionary. It began not as a revolutionary organization. It was collaborationist movement. It legitimated the colonial authorities. It acknowledged the authority of the British Crown over South Africa, even in the petitions that they will send to the kingdom in England. They will say that they accept the British Crown over South Africa and South African people. And in the beginning, they were not even fighting for the inclusion of all black people. They were saying civilized black men, not even women, should be allowed to participate in elections. So that is what I got to appreciate, that perhaps a different vehicle is needed to fight for economic freedom in our lifetime. And then even the struggle for economic freedom in our lifetime, we had consensus amongst ourselves. It's not that I imposed my views. I didn't put a guard on anyone's head and say that you agree with me or not. I placed my perspectives, and majority of the issues that were raised as well, even when in parliament, will gain traction. But in terms of practice and the mannerisms that guide how people want to actualize what we agree upon in principle, is something else come up. And then peacefully and decisively disassociate with that.
I hear that.
With the view of assembling a collective which will be consistent and be aligned in terms of revolutionary principles.
I absolutely hear that. And I think, you know, you frame it as an evolution, as a, when I see a change is needed, right? And pragmatism, which then brings me to the question of, pragmatically, what does success on the ideological scale of what you seek to achieve, what does that look like for you?
I'm not sure if I understand that question.
Pragmatically.
Yes.
In practice, what would success look like when you have achieved your ideological goal?
I think success would mean that we should build a mass movement that exists in all spheres of society and genuinely cares about the livelihoods and socio-economic conditions of our people, because our people are in deep poverty everywhere, and they seem to
be. Who do you define as our people? Who's not our people?
It's black Africans. In South Africa, you have got black Africans who are the indigenous population here in South Africa, and there is descendants of colonial settlers. So those are the white people who are represented by political parties like the Democratic Alliance, and they are the ones who control South Africa's economy. They are the ones who micromanage the African National Congress as well. They manage the politics and allocation of resources in South Africa. They own and control all the financial institutions. They own more than 80% of South Africa's land. So that is that this colonial descendants, and that is the people who, not the people, that is the system that we are fighting against. Our people refers to the black African majority, and almost all of them stay in spaces that are defined by high levels of poverty, of individuals and even of communities, poor infrastructure, no reliable water supply, no reliable electricity supply, roads with potholes, schools with broken windows, clinics without medications. So that is basically the people that we primarily represent and are fighting on behalf of. And if you were to go to the spaces where our people stay, majority of our people stay, you realize that there's very little changes that have happened, even with the so-called democracies. And there's actually even degeneration of some of the spaces in the townships, in the unrecognized settlements, so-called informal settlements. If you go to Alexander in Stratla, go to Elazumtswalle, the informal settlement in Cape Town, and in Freedom Park, just nearby where the Freedom Charter was adopted, and check the conditions of the people there. There's no improvement, none whatsoever. It's worse in villages. I come from a village. There's not a single thing that has changed in the village that I come from. Actually, if anything, the basic things that used to happen in the past and no longer used to happen, like just to scrape the gravel road that is there, to make it much more usable. So the conditions of our people are not improving, and that has got multiple impacts in terms of the well-being of black people. I was speaking in a press conference yesterday to state a simple fact that even the average life expectancy of black people is 10 years younger than the average life expectancy of white people in South Africa. And it can't be the will of God that black people should die easily of preventable diseases and ailments that could be contained if they were living in proper conditions. They had access to adequate and proper health care. So that is basically what we're dealing with. And I know in the ANC there's delusion of non-racialism. It's absolute rubbish.
That's okay. Yeah. That's them. For you, you have been, for as long as we have known the name Floyd Shibambo,
yes,
in the corridors of power, in close proximity to decision-making, and in leadership structures.
I don't know what that means. Yeah.
You don't know what that means?
Yeah.
Okay. So you do not feel that over the years that you have been in politics, you have been able to inform, direct, influence,
so
power and decisions?
So, like, I think, again, moving from hypothesis, let's talk practice.
Yeah.
So
when you were in parliament, yeah, when you were in the leadership of the Youth League, when you were writing the tenets of the EFF, when you were building the capacity, yeah, for the MK, all of those things, you do not believe that to be power?
Power is distributed in South Africa.
answer my question. You do not believe that to be power.
No. Let me give you the context so that you can get the proper answer.
I need to understand if we are operating from you believe all of those areas
you won't be able to understand the response clearly.
That is disingenuous for you to believe that I won't be able to understand.
Can I give context? Let me give the context first. Because if I just respond in the manner that it is, it will sound very simplistic. Power in South Africa is exercised by government. And government is not parliament.
Yeah, parliament absolutely.
Is a legislative and oversight body that oversees. It doesn't matter what you say as parliament and you do. You can propose legislation, you can have oversight mechanisms. But government, as per law, has got the ultimate decision-making power on allocation of resources, on prioritization of where to build schools, where to repair roads, and what gets to be expended. If the priority is on borrowing of the money, that is the real power of the state. What the role I have played historically, I have never been government. One, being in an organization that was in government could influence policy positions. When I was in the ANC Youth League, and I've demonstrated that when I was in the ANC Youth League, not just through secret meetings, even through the public documents that we wrote about economic freedom in our lifetime, about building a developmental state, establishment of a sovereign wealth fund, introduction of fee-free education, a variety of policy submissions. We have always made those, but I didn't have the power to implement free education. Same with parliament. So you can check all the interventions that we made when I was in parliament. In state of nation address debates, we'll always propose a variety of solutions as to what is to be done in terms of, but then as a person, I've never had government responsibility. The closest I could have gotten to government was to oversee members of mayoral committees that belong to the economic freedom fighters were deployed in the city of Johannesburg, eThekwini, Nelson Mandela Bay, and Ekurhuleni. And on record again, if you were to check what were the mandates that we gave to those who were in government, it was insourcing of workers like security guards and cleaners who were employed by private companies and paid just a fraction of what the municipality was paying to those companies, was prioritization of informal settlements, was the replacement of the bucket toilets. Actually, part of the reasons we had a huge difference in the EFF was when I was saying we should remove all the bucket toilets in Ekurhuleni because the member of the mayoral committee responsible for sanitation is a member of the EFF and said that let's abolish this, only to discover that some of the leaders of the EFF are involved in supplying those bucket toilets. So every time we have gotten closer to a space that we advocate for revolutionary change, we have consistently done so. But I have never been government in my life. I think that settles that.
So then, how do you see a platform like Maibuye, if you contextualize it in that way and feel that the levers of power have been far from you, how then do you see a platform like Maibuye as a path to power which will allow you to affect the changes you want to affect?
For me, it's not about me as an individual.
Mm.
I think it's about consolidation of revolutionary disciplined ideas as to what should be done differently. So the manner in which Africa Maibuye movement is framed and understood is that whilst it's going to contest for political power to have state power to implement progressive programs and agendas, that the fact that we've gathered as people, let's see as to what can we do now Like, what are the interventions that we can deal with now? That, what do we prioritize? Do we, when we gain access to little resources, do we gather ourselves and organize a protest action or a rally to talk about water? Or we go and look for a water drilling company to drill borehole in villages that have never seen running water. They've been relying on rivers and streams to fetch water. And in areas where there is a crisis of bridges and roads and everything else, what do we do? Do we stand on the roadside and complain, or we collectively try to intervene for an immediate solution? So in the 4 months of our existence, there's multiple social assistance programs which Maibuye has got to do. And the good thing as well is that we have got a group of medical practitioners and medical doctors who have constituted themselves into Maibuye Medics. And then they provide healthcare services in informal settlements and townships to people who would have never gained access to a doctor in their entire life. They provide screening and provide medical care to different constituencies. Our students go to high schools to assist learners with applications to universities, applications for NSFAS, and also even run revision classes to impact on the lives of the people now. And in provinces, they adopt orphanages and have soup kitchens that can assist our people now. Depending on the scale as to how far can we contribute, we always and will always encourage. It's actually in the organizational structure of Maibuye that we're not just a talking organization. There are programmatic things that we get involved in. So that is why in the constitution of Africa Maibuye Movement, social assistance is a very senior position in the national leadership, province, region, ward-based branch, voting district-based branch, and social assistance is also a standing item in all the deliberations of our organization. So we in that frame. Now, in doing that, and also with the organizational experience that we have, we believe that majority of the people of South Africa will appreciate the work and consistency of Africa Maibuye Movement. And if they so wish, they will give Africa Maibuye access to political power to be able to drive a revolutionary project which will bring about meaningful change to the lives of our people. That is basically what we are all about.
Speaking of resources and how you use resources, I think when we talk about politics, you yourself have mentioned various accountabilities and the different parties and formations you have been in.
Yes.
The contestations around power, access to public funds. Inevitably, it leads to talking about resource and money. And you yourself are no stranger to controversy following you around funding, around VBS and allegations. How are you funding Maibuye?
No, look, there's no controversy about VBS about me. Like, there was like nonsensical sponsored writings of Daily Maverick, and a lot of it is being revealed now, which was sponsored by the ex-Minister of Finance, Pravin Gordhan, who's dead now. And then he gave money to try to tarnish our names, even employed the Batoyi with the hope that we're going to be arrested because we were exposing the rogue unit which he had established in SARS. He's dead now, and the energy to pursue us from a criminalization and a defiling point of view has died down as well. So there is no issue that accrued to me. Like, there have been so many moments where the entire system was reliant on our decisions on what happens in politics and everything else. If those that were in power had anything tangible as relating to wrongdoing on my side, they would have taken action. So there's never been any wrongdoing. Like the state would have acted. There's never been even a single text message or phone inquiry from the SAPS to say it must come and account for VBS. It was just an engineered smear campaign which has failed because the master of such a smear campaign is dead now. And it always happens in politics in terms of what happens.
And I think with the fullness of time, yeah, South Africa moves very slowly.
Yeah, so
it can take many years. And with the fullness of time, so you all of will or will things, not yes. be vindicated. But yeah. my question stands.
Yeah, look, there's no one who is funding. There's no major funding for Africa Mayweather movement. We have leadership structures in all provinces, and we have got membership that within it has entrepreneurs and professionals and everything. And so the little resources that we put together is able to deal with the work that we're dealing with now. There's never been a major expenditure program that we're engaged in. It's just basic travel to provinces to...
Oh, I was wondering because you were talking about drilling boreholes, you're talking about clinics, all of that is quite capital intensive.
Mayweather Medics is the professionals who assist, they use their voluntary time. It's medical doctors, they fund themselves. Mm. They've never asked for a single cent from any of us. The boreholes that we dug in Mawenisi village in Malamlele, the one we're doing in the Eastern Cape, we got donations. I think the Eastern Cape one was 70,000 rand. The ones in Malamlele was 80,000 rand. We asked for donations for someone to pay to dig those boreholes. Mm-hmm. So with little resources, you can have a very huge impact. And that is what we're prioritizing as a Mayweather. And we purposefully are not rushing into having and hosting huge rallies which can cost you 50, 100 million because we do not have that resource. We organize people in areas where they are. We've had multiple... There's no municipality of the 205 local municipalities and 8 metropolitan municipalities in South Africa where Africa Mayweather has not had an engagement and interaction with the people. So we're present in all the areas of South Africa because we know how to organize the people on the ground. So there is no need for highly intensive funding and money that is... And personally, I'm exposed to different models of how to run a political program without a lot of resources. When I started the EFF, there was no money. There were not even people who could donate. There were just some... Even to register the party was almost impossible at that period. And we could push until the first elections and received 1.1 million votes during that period. So even now, I'm fully aware that I started the organization. It's not about money in terms of how you run an organization. If you want to run an organization on the basis of money, then you must just go and look for a job elsewhere and not pursue politics in terms of what you have to do. Mm-hmm. That is basically where we are.
And because the questions around funding of political parties, of... elections, it's expensive. Elections, registrations, all of those things. And oftentimes, also the support of foreign players, whether it is NGOs, whether it is partners who come on board to support programs. And how do you feel about foreign interests playing a role in South African politics, particularly because you seem to talk of a pan-African agenda?
No, I don't think there is foreign money which is funding politics at a substantial level in South Africa, except if the global racist capitalist world is using the Oppenheimers to fund the Democratic Alliance and all those puppet political parties they've created of Muzimaimani, of RISE, and all of those things there. Because in terms of the political party declaration, which is public process, the Oppenheimers are responsible for 80% of giving money to political parties. And they give to the liberal political parties and the puppet black parties that they've created. So there's not been any revelation of foreign funding of any political party. If there is, we will have to speak against that. Also, we'll have to open criminal case charges because it's against the law to use foreign money to fund a political party in South Africa as per the Political Party Funding Act. In my view, we're not going to accept money from the Oppenheimers. We're not going to accept money from the white capitalist establishment. We're not going to accept any foreign money. We will have a model that will be able to speak to all the people of South Africa, to all the voters, because the most important
thing... All the black African people of South Africa.
Yeah, like the most important thing for a political movement is to speak and persuade all the voters and potential voters, to persuade them to register. So some believe that the most impactful way to do so is organizing rallies. Some just do door-to-door only. Some organize tea parties. Some believe that if you put billboards and posters and some believe that just talking to the media is the way to talk to the people. Well, there's a variety of mechanisms. But we believe that the plan and the strategy organizationally that we have will be able to reach out to all the people. But there's something very surprising that also surprised me as well, because since the beginning of the Maibuye process, I think we have had four media conferences, including the one, so like it's the average of one press conference per month, as opposed to possibly 40 press conferences which the ANC would have or the other organizations in the space. But despite the fact that we have had four press conferences since June 19th, and despite the fact that myself as the leader of this process, I think this is the fifth interview I do with anyone in the whole process. But when you go to the ground, there is literally no one who does not know about Maibuye Africa and South Africa today.
So
when we went to Umkhosi Womhlanga in Pongola, old people, old and young people knew about Maibuye. Every corner of South Africa and Nkomazi, in the border of Mozambique, everyone gets to know about Africa Maibuye movement. Perhaps it's a...
And what do you hear them say about it?
Everyone else is saying this is long overdue. We needed a different voice outside of the current and existing political organizations. And I believe that because the people of South Africa basically protested and boycotted the 2024 general elections. If you have more than 60% of eligible voters not participating in elections, you must know that there's something wrong.
Yes, so
something is fundamentally wrong all political parties.
Some of us may view that as a cynical landscape where people are saying, what is there to be offered? You know, cynical about a very noisy and very crowded political landscape. And so... ask you then,
yeah,
what is uniquely different about Maibuye?
Yeah. I think we've already explained that context, that the main differentiating factor about Africa Maibuye movement is that it's not an electoral platform. It's an organization that is seeking and implementing solutions that we can now. Like, we're dealing with the problems and challenges of the people now. Actually, in our own discussions internally, is that if a non-profit organization was going to be an instrument to build roads and build schools and build universities and build hospitals. We're going to register an NPO and do that for the people. So whatever we gain access to, we want to respond to the frustrations of the people now. That is why, like, all our formations are concerned about the issues that affect our people now. The manner in which we organize at a base level, there are so many interventions that we say should be dealt with now and not just to say, I'm going to respond to your crisis when I am in power or when I've won government seats and everything. We're not an electoral platform like all these other political parties. That is one. Then the second aspect as well is that organizationally, we are organically grounded within traditional and religious leaders as well. So it's compulsory. In Africa, might be a movement that whenever a leadership structure is constituted in areas where there's traditional leadership, that there must be representative of traditional leadership in the leadership structure of Africa, Mayabuya movement. And there must necessarily be representatives of faith leaders in all the leadership structures of Africa, Mayabuya, because it's evident now that traditional royal leaders, faith leaders, are recipients of even complaints which otherwise were supposed to be handled politically by the representatives, which majority are absent from their duties and functions. So when people do not have jobs, when people have got crises in their homes, their children are excluded from school, they go to the pastors, they go to the chiefs and kings in villages to say that, what do I do now? Like, how do you help me? So we then said that let us infuse the role of traditional and religious leaders in a political movement that is disciplined so that they can form part of the solution when we then get to rise to power. That is basically how we different from these organizations. And one thing which is guaranteed, it's not, the difference will be felt in the ground. It will not be what we say with our mouth. Majority of the people of South Africa will come into contact with Africa Mayabuya movement for the first time when it is doing something for them, either as a student movement or as a women's movement or youth movement or as MAWUSA or as medics or as the law clinic as well, which
Mayabuya has established. So let me understand this. Yes. So by your own telling, you are a largely self-funded and volunteer-based organization.
Yes.
With limited resource because of that. And your way of engaging people is to meet them at their moment of need.
Yes.
You then must pick certain areas where you are going to be impactful. Because if you have a limited resource and also with dependencies, so you're not going to build roads for people, you can't afford it. You're not going to build a clinic, you can't afford it.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to put a borehole in every village, you can't afford it. So what are your priorities with the limited resource that you have?
Do you know in our areas there are so many social and impactful social assistance programs that you can involve the structures in without money?
What do you mean
like
by that?
So you will find in villages, in townships, there is no rubbish collection. Like even public spaces and even closer to schools, there's no one who has ever come there. A branch of Africa Mayabuya movement can say that let us organize ourselves in the community here and clean our community. A branch of Africa Mayabuya movement in Orange Farm in Loli can say let us do door to door and check if this child had a household, if they've all been registered with just the basic social grant so that they've got at least the bare minimum of access to food on a monthly basis. The like basic assistance in schools as to security, but those that have made progress and can assist, the students of Africa Maibuye movement, they didn't need money to go and run revision programs to assist students with mathematics and physical sciences and all the subjects that are being offered now. So there is multiple programs which are done at a very small scale but highly impactful for the communities that are being assisted. So that is the nature of the organization that we're not, we know now that we can't do large scale and mega projects, but wherever we can, there is something which if we come as a collective, we can be able to do. So, the only thing possibly that the medical doctors that are in Maibuye and the health practitioners that are in Maibuye, the only thing possibly that they pay for to go to an informal settlement is petrol money, like they have, because they're medical doctors, they run private practices, and then they go and assist people. So these multiple programs, and we then get streamlined.
Yes, but they don't have the medication to dispense, they can write a letter.
No, they do.
They have the medication to dispense.
So they do. When they were in Deep Sloot 2 weeks ago, they were able to assist some of the community members with medications. When they were in Alexander, I think about a month ago, they were able to assist some of the community members with basic medication. So they don't just go to screen because they do anticipate, they do have an understanding of what are the health profiles of informal settlements, of townships, of some of the areas in terms of what are the common diseases and ailments that define our people. So there is a lot which you can do without money. If you sit down and say, comrades, here in a branch, what are the immediate and priority issues that we have to deal with? There's always something that we can come up with.
That's a very interesting way of tackling, and a very novel way of tackling the problems that we have. And I am very much looking forward to see how the various individuals, the various people who have been impacted, respond to it, and what that translates into in whatever guise Maibuye continues to be. So I have a question, though, about what next. We have a local election coming up in 12 months or so. Are you going to field councillors?
So let's just quickly on this point of social assistance. And by the way, our social assistance programs are not about campaigning for elections. It's not an electoral gimmick that we want to assist you so that you can vote for us. No, it's because we believe that as black people, we should collectively uplift each other. We must create conditions for collective upliftment in all the areas. That is why economically, one of the principles at the base level that we promote is black economic solidarity, that even at the local level, we must promote a situation where black people economically support each other. For instance, we're hosting a program, a national conference in Soweto on the 5th to the 7th of December. We go to all the BNBs, to all the areas in Soweto to hire them for the purposes of the conference. They say, give us 15,000 for 4 days here, 20,000 there, and then we then go and get other people to support them. We get the catering companies from Soweto to be the ones who are going to provide catering in the national conference of Maibuye. So all the services get to be provided by our people so that they've got some economic means. That is how we are structured, and that is how we're going to exist for the rest of the organization's life. And in terms of the way forward, we will field candidates in all the wards in the upcoming local government elections.
All the wards
in South Africa, yes.
Wow.
These 4,468 wards, we're going to field 4,468 candidates in all the 205 local municipalities, 8 metropolitan municipalities, and the 53 districts of South Africa. And we're going to contest, and we're going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Wow.
In terms of what we're dealing with. So the other thing which... there can be so many characterizations of what people believe they can play a role on. Mm-hmm. One of the roles that I know how to play efficiently is to be an organizer. So I know how to organize people, and I know South Africa. So there's never been any part of South Africa that I've never worked in politically, in KwaZulu-Natal, in the Eastern Cape, in Mpumalanga, in the Northwest. So I know the whole of South Africa, and I'm familiar as to just what do we need to do in each and every area so that we can have the necessary impact. And we are going to have impact in the local government elections.
Floyd, I suppose as a last question, that's a good place to ask this question. In any other career path, a person that's tried in so many different organizations the way that you have, the question would be, is it maybe not time to try a different career path?
No, look,
are you succeeding in your career as a politician?
Like, I'm very, very successful. Like my political life and the contributions that I got to make, it has had far larger impact than people who are far much older. We've got to inform a lot of discourse and got to, I started the EFF when I was 29 years old and became its deputy president when I was 30 years old and shaped its character. And I left. But there's still thousands of people there who are employed by the EFF and are in different responsibilities. I influenced where I spoke about insourcing of workers. There are many workers, tens of thousands of workers who have got full-time jobs because of the contribution that we have to meet. You can check the contributions that we have got to make in Parliament in shaping legislation and of course, influencing discourse as to what should happen. So even this process that we are in now is a very successful project, a necessary long overdue project which had to be done. And we do so voluntarily and always seek to gain additional skills and knowledge and understanding of everything else that we do. And the good thing about, I don't think of political work as a career. I don't think of political work as a career. I think it's work that you do voluntarily and as a contribution to society and selflessly as well. If I were in pursuit of selfish purposes, I would have played different roles. If I were to be selfish, I'll be a minister or now in South Africa, possibly very senior minister, because it's not even a secret that I've been approached many times, even when I left MK, that please come and become a minister. I said, I'll never do that. Even when I left EFF, I said, I'll never do that. Even when I was in the EFF, met with Cyril Ramaphosa, said, I'm going to announce you as a deputy minister of finance, which is the most powerful position at that time. I said, I won't do that. So I know what I'm doing. And South Africa will get to appreciate the roles that we are going to play in the future much more efficiently on behalf of everyone.
What do you hope that many years from now, God willing, at the end of your life, what do you hope will be your lasting legacy?
I think what I've, like, the legacy is not hope. What I know is that we'll have built a sustainable movement which is going to lead South Africa. That I know. So I'm not playing finder with my Buyele. I know that it's going to grow to be a strong movement which is going to lead South Africa, not in a coalition, as the only organization leading South Africa. And then when it's leading South Africa, it's going to lead to a massive industrialization which is going to create jobs for our people. Is going to build mega infrastructure, which will change the infrastructure patterns that we have now and upgrade the public infrastructure, which has been neglected for a very long time. It's going to bring dignity to the lives of black people, not only in South Africa, but in the entire African continent and the African diaspora, because there has never been a successful country in the entire black world, be it in Haiti, Bahamas, Jamaica, all the African countries here in the African continent, none of them have ever achieved success. But under my government here in South Africa, will achieve optimal prosperity. And that is exactly what is going to happen.
And the pillars of that optimal prosperity would be?
It's the principles that are contained here in the Restoration Manifesto of Africa Mayobia Movement, of collective prosperity, that whatever we do, let us not look into what we achieve just as individuals. It must be collective prosperity. Like we have written and will illustrate that the very few success stories of economic development in the recent past is the People's Republic of China. And how did they achieve that was to suppress individual capitalist aspirations in favor of collective prosperity. And that is the driving mission of the Africa Mayobia Movement, that we're in pursuit of collective prosperity.
Those are a lot of big words.
Yeah.
And my son is 18 years old.
Yes.
First time voter. Yes. In next year's election.
Yes.
If you were to explain to him why he must vote for you, what would you say?
The other thing is that I don't think 18-year-olds are ignorant, one. And I don't think that majority of the people of South Africa are ignorant, as many people assume.
I don't think they're ignorant either.
So DM, that is
what I don't understand.
I just
want
to clarify that.
Like, no, it's not about ignorance. I'm saying those are a lot of big words.
Yeah, so the it's not big words. Collective prosperity means that we collectively prosper. Mm. It's not a big word.
Okay.
So and collective prosperity means that you'll have a government that is not about empowerment of few individuals, it's about empowerment of everyone, and a true liberation movement that is going to bring about true freedom for everyone in a manner that it is. Because we refuse.
I'm looking to,
no,
for
we
you
refuse,
to
no,
explain.
We refuse, no, we refuse. We refuse to be simplistic as well, because you'll end up losing the meaning of how you have
you
to
refuse
explain.
To be simplistic.
Yes.
Which is different from being simple.
Yeah, look, you have, it's different, but you must not be simplistic in a way that will lose the context of what you are dealing with in any given condition. The reality is that we saying that we have assembled ourselves as Africa Mayobia Movement. We are a movement that exists in all the communities which seeks to attend to the challenges of our people now and promote the spirit of common prosperity and black economic solidarity and working together to commonly uplift each other. And with that consistently done, we're going to win political power in South Africa. And even when we take that political power, we're not going to use it like the existing political parties that are using the political power for self-enrichment and enrichment of few capitalists or few people or few individuals. We're going to use political power to empower majority of the people and drive a developmental agenda and program that is going to achieve common prosperity, which is meaning that all of us must commonly prosper and not just for individuals.
So if you were to make that a slogan, you're good with slogans. What's your slogan?
The slogan is total freedom and emancipation now. That is the slogan of Africa Mayobia movement, that is total freedom and emancipation now. Not in our lifetime, now. We're looking for freedom now on areas where we can intervene now. We then act now. That is the driving mission. So every time branches and structures of Mayobia meet, they must ask a question of what do we do now? There's crisis everywhere, but what do we do now? And how do we respond to the crisis now? And that is what drives all of us every day.
Emancipation from whom or what?
So emancipation from slavery, from bondage, from poverty, from underdevelopment, from lack of access to education, from poor health care, from constraints to develop our communities fully. So that is the emancipation that we are fighting for. That is basically, and we say it here, and from cultural oppression and suppression as well. That is the freedom that we're talking about. So we say in the Restoration Manifesto that Africa Mayobia movement is a liberation movement that is fighting for total freedom and emancipation now. So it's fighting for total political freedom, because the politics and the political power that is given in this context becomes limited because of the capitalist system above the political power. So we're fighting for total political freedom, for total economic freedom. So total economic freedom means total control of your natural resources and localized industrialization to create jobs for our people. That is what it means. And we're fighting for total cultural freedom and decolonization, meaning that we have been submerged under the Western cultural domination to the extent that almost irreversibly we can't even liberate ourselves in terms of the languages that we speak and the mannerisms as well, in terms of standards of how people get to look and everything else there, in many aspects. So we're fighting for total cultural freedom and decolonization. We're also fighting to build a progressive developmental state, and then we're fighting to become a caring and responsive organization as Africa Mayobuye. So that is what defines us as a movement. And then, of course, there are core objectives and values that guide how we then operate on all of those issues.
I love to hear it. Very interesting platform, a very novel way of looking at some of the challenges that beset the country as a whole. And I look forward to seeing how you grow and develop. And I definitely look forward to seeing how you participate in next year's election and how you prosper on the other side of that. Good luck.
No, thank you. Yeah, we're definitely going to be a very successful organization. And we're not playing finder. We're not taking chances.
Like the finder.
We're not taking chances. We know what we're doing. We're building a project that we know is going to be successful. We don't fail. On everything else that we do, we never fail. Yeah.
I believe you believe that. Yeah. I hear the conviction in your voice. And
yeah. don't fail. I don't even end school. I don't fail.
Wow. It's been a pleasure. And thank you very much for giving us your time.
Thank you very much.
I really am looking forward to seeing all of the work that you are out there doing. Thank you.
Okay, cool, Shisha.